there are two ways through life. The way of nature and the way of grace. You have to choose which one you'll follow.
We're alligators.
You'll be grown before that tree is tall.
It takes fierce will to get ahead in this world.
Come on, hit me. Hit me. Come on, son.
He's afraid of you. You expect things of him only an adult can accomplish.
I've just always wanted you to be strong. Be your own man.
Father. Mother. Always you wrestle inside me. Always you will.
Someday we'll fall down and weep. Understand it all. All things.
Like a good movie. Glad I've watched it about 5 times in the last week. And 2 of you have seen it too, so thanks for coming prepared. Well, good morning, Jacobs. Well, it's great to be back so soon since the last time I was here. I'm really thankful that it's not as hot as it was last time, and some of you are too. I have memories of sweat dripping down my back and looking out at people falling asleep because they were a little bit warm themselves. So I think we're in a better situation already today. Plus, we're talking about God and movies, 2 of my favorite topics, especially when they're combined together. Now, that was just a 2-minute preview of a movie, and as you know, a trailer doesn't actually tell you anything about a movie. It just kind of gives you a feel for it. There's a lot going on in Tree of Life. I've been preparing for this, I think, longer than I knew I was going to be giving this message, back to when I saw it when it came out about a year ago. And I have been preparing notes. Yesterday my kitchen table was just filled with note cards. I mean, way more note cards than you'd use for like a 20-page research paper in college. All over, and then I was stacking them into piles, like I was putting together a research paper. And in the end, I ended up throwing a lot of them away because they just didn't have any purpose for this. So I am actually probably more prepared to have beer or coffee with someone and have a really great conversation about this movie. Not as much to talk to people about it in a sermon-like setting. So here goes nothing. We'll see how this goes. And since none of you have seen the movie, and I assume that going in, I promise not to say anything that requires any previous knowledge about the movie, and there will be no spoilers. And just so you know, for those of you who have seen it, you maybe have experienced this reality as well. It's impossible to give a spoiler for this movie. The movie itself is not a spoiler for this movie. It is that complex and confusing. So just to try to get us on the same page a little bit, because I'm going to talk about some characters and the main point of the story and things like that so that we have something to actually engage in today. Here's a very brief video by some of the actors and filmmakers giving an introduction of the story.
Is hard to describe. It's not an easy movie just to say in a sentence because there's so many different levels to it. Usually you try to say something like, well, it's about a family growing up in a small town in Texas in the 1950s, but it's much more than that.
Toscanini once recorded a piece 65 times. You know what he said when he finished? It could be better.
It's an incredibly personal and intimate story with layers of perspectives that are bigger in size and scope, but that doesn't sort of alter its intimacy.
The nuns taught us there are 2 ways through life, the way of nature and the way of grace. You have to choose which one you'll follow.
The way the film is set up, you have a mother who represents grace, who is love and caring and giving, and you have a father that represents nature. By nature, I mean that survival instinct in nature, that one plant will oppress another plant, choke it out even for its own survival.
Like you're in trouble. You don't want to fight. You don't want any trouble. The minute you see him blink, crack him, okay? Okay, come on.
And the father carries a lot of resentment, a lot of anger, not being able to get ahead as the American dream describes, and seeing others and feeling very oppressed himself, and then he passes that oppression to his son.
And their son is influenced by these two and has these two forces kind of at war inside. And he is a conflicted young man, and we see him as a conflicted adult. And he has to find his way through that. We go back and we see how those two elements took seed in him and grew. And we see how he remains conflicted until he finds his own way to resolution, to love and forgiveness.
There's this connection between nature and spirit, and how we as mankind kind of navigate between the two.
In the Tree of Life, nature represents a kind of relentless power that goes on without any thought of us, of humans. And we either fight it or we're part of it.
You make yourself what you are. You have control of your own destiny.
I think it's true that any Terry Malick film is an event, but this one even more so, I guess, because it's both a Terry Malick film and it's this film.
I'd like to thank Brad Pitt for helping me this morning. I've never had him help me with a sermon before, so it's an honor to work with him for the first time. He's class act. Everything they say is true. He's good. Okay, so a few people were mentioned. I'm going to talk about the three main characters, but I also want to point out Terrence Malick, or Terry Malick, as the producer said, is the writer and director of this film. He's this kind of legendary, if for no other reason, that he's made some good movies, but he's also mysterious. He's made, I think, 5 films in 36 years. So he's not really working at a real fast clip here. He's been known to take 5-10 years in a movie to make it right. And there's a lot of speculation that this film was kind of his masterpiece, in a sense that it was a chance for him to kind of give his own theological beliefs about some things. And also the main character, or one of the main characters, Brad Pitt, the father, is loosely based on him, is the theory. But he doesn't actually do interviews and things like that, so we don't actually know. So here's some people you have in the movie. You have the mother, which she is portrayed in this kind of angelic way, playing with butterflies, and the sun is always shining on her just perfect. She is representative of grace. Then you have the father, Brad Pitt. He's kind of the tough, hard-nosed guy who is focused on instilling in his 3 sons work ethic and discipline. And then you have Jack, who's their oldest of 3 sons, and the story is told both back in the 1950s when this family's living in Texas, and also looking back on life. It's told from his perspective. This is him as a young boy, and then Sean Penn is the character who plays, or the man who plays his character as an adult. So that's kind of the story. The other thing, this isn't a spoiler, you would learn this within 5 minutes if you watch the movie. Of these 3 boys they have, the middle one dies at some point, I think around the age of 19, which is right between when we see them as kids and when they're looking back as adults. And that's an important part of the story, is how they respond to this death of someone in the family. I already mentioned that it's a deeply complex movie. It's also very theological. It's different probably than any movie that you've ever seen. Certainly for me, that's the case. It's not linear. And by that, I mean it doesn't happen in order. It doesn't use plot and dialogue between characters, you know, those basic things that you come to expect in a movie and that the trailer kind of makes you think is going to happen. It doesn't use those to advance the story. It's very disjointed. And in that way, it's hard to follow all the time what's going on. And just when you think you know what's going on, dinosaurs show up. And you think I'm kidding. Dinosaurs show up. It's by far one of the most beautiful films that I think you could ever see. Cinematography of this is just incredible. You don't watch Tree of Life as much as you experience it, almost like you're witnessing something being born or created. And it's similar to what we discussed when I was here a few weeks ago, in that creation is good. You watch this movie and you're reminded that creation is good. So despite a few less than positive things that I just said about the movie, I assure you it's definitely worth watching, and hopefully the rest of my message does a better job of inspiring you to go see it. I'm going to give these two copies of the film to Jacob as well for you guys to watch. You can watch it with your friends, with your small groups, with your family, by yourself, whatever. I just ask that you share them as a community. So don't just take it and then keep it forever, but find out who else wants to see it and share it. I don't care who gets it in the end. I don't need them back, but enjoy it. A few tips for those of you who will watch it. First of all, I would watch it at night, or at least in your downstairs in a dark room. I'd watch it on a big TV. If you don't have a big TV, use this as an excuse to go get them. They just pretty much give them away at the stores these days. So go get a big TV. Go downstairs in your basement. If you don't already have a basement entertainment room, set that up. A nice sound system. There's actually the very first part of the movie, before it even starts, there's this word from the creators of the movie that says, "This you should play this at a loud volume." And I would second that. I'd crank it up. But maybe have the remote in your hand because parts of it will get a little loud. And you don't want to wake up the kids and stuff. And I would minimize the distractions because it is an intense movie. It's 2 hours and 15 minutes. You got to pay attention the whole time or you'll totally be confused. Even if you pay attention the whole time, you'll probably be totally confused. And then with that, don't expect to get it, at least not right away. I think you truly need to watch it several times for that complexity and beauty and the profound theological statements that are made to kind of start to take root inside of you. So, Tree of Life, in its most basic sense, offers a response to an existential question that my seminary advisor, Andy Root, used to ask me and my classmates nearly every week. What is a life and why is it worth living? What's a life and why is it worth living? And it responds to that. And not to be overlooked in the midst of all the philosophical and theological content that fills nearly every scene of this film, just so you know, there is an actual tree in the movie. So the Tree of Life movie actually has this tree. And you see them planting it near the beginning. Jack, Sean Penn, or the younger boy, is right there. When he's born, they plant this tree, which becomes this character almost in the film because we see this tree over and over. And it's, I guess it's in some ways symbolizing life, growth, marking of time. And it's something that they have helped create together and that God nurtures throughout life.
You'll be growing before that tree is tall.
And you hear her say, "He'll be growing before this tree is tall." This is a still from the movie where the boys are playing in it. Constantly you see, and it's always this view looking up into the trees. I don't know if you've spent any time looking up into trees, but they're really beautiful to look at from that angle, and especially a big tree is super impressive. And you just wonder, how long has this been here, and what has it seen? Who's climbed in this tree? Who's hung from its branches and jumped out? What kind of stories could it tell if it could talk? And so in my own family, I know I have a connection with trees, and that is that at our cabin up in northwest Wisconsin, we plant trees. We started doing this when my oldest niece was born about 4 years ago. And so we build these trees, or we grow these trees, and then we plant them, we water them, we mark time with them. That's my oldest niece, Claire, standing next to her tree. We take pictures through the years of how they are growing in comparison to how the tree is growing, kind of the way that maybe you used to do in the doorway of your kitchen or something like that. You and your siblings would mark how tall you were and how tall you've grown. And so we have these trees that are reminders of life. We actually have reminders of life all around us, but in the summers we see these trees and we take pictures with them and they remind us of how far we've come. My mom has actually taken the role as the director of tree watering. It's a role that she wears very proudly, and she will talk to the trees, she will touch the trees, she'll just hang out with them, and I used to think she was just really goofy, and I still do think my mom is goofy in a lot of ways, good ways, until one weekend when she wasn't going to be there, and she passed on this role to me just for the weekend, and I found myself, because you have to water them for like 5 or 10 minutes each, and I found myself holding the hose without realizing it, and talking to the trees the way that my goofy mom does, and realize I got kind of caught up in it, realizing that it's a pretty humbling experience to take part in creation, or at least to nurture that which God has already brought into being. And with watering a tree, that's one of the opportunities you get. And so I found some connections, I think, with the movie in that whole idea of the tree being part of life. Now, you've already seen and heard portions of the opening scene in the two earlier videos that I showed. But as far as opening scenes to a movie goes, the Tree of Life's opening scene narrated by the mother figure is a pretty good one, and I think it's worth watching now in its entirety, because it's going to give us some content that we're going to be using the rest of our time together.
The man's taught us there are two ways through life. The way of nature and the way of grace. You have to choose which one you'll follow. Grace doesn't try to please itself. Accepts being slighted, forgotten, disliked. Accepts insults and injuries. Nature only wants to please itself.
Bless, O Lord, this.
Get others to please it too.
In loving and faithful service.
Likes to lord it over them.
Bless these boys.
To have its own way. It finds reasons to be unhappy when all the world is shining around it. And love is smiling through all things. They taught us that no one who loves the way of grace ever comes to a bad end. I will be true to you.
Isn't that awesome? So, just to be clear, that is the main point, the main thesis, the main theme of the movie, what she says. There are two ways through life, the way of nature and the way of grace. Now, if you're willing to equate grace and love, which is what I think Terry Malick does here, what the mother is saying there in the beginning, what you just heard, is a lot like 1 Corinthians 13. You know that verse that many of you married people used in your wedding? Love is patient, kind, doesn't envy or boast, is not self-seeking, doesn't delight in evil, always protects, trusts, hopes, and perseveres. If you switch grace and love, that's basically what she's saying. It's also a lot like what Paul writes in Galatians 5 when he describes what he sees as the two ways through life, that you can either live by sinful nature or by the fruit of the Spirit. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, and self-control. Those are the fruit of the Spirit. Now, sinful nature, in that case, in Galatians 5, would correspond to what the mother simply calls nature, and the fruit of the Spirit would be grace or love. Now, we're introduced to the mother as the character who represents this way of grace, loving, nurturing, forgiving, especially of her children. Here's a clip of her. Now, if the mother is the way of grace, then the father, on the other side, has to be the way of nature. And we're introduced to him as someone who's obsessed with success, obsessed with money. Good enough is never good enough for him.
Frank Johnson. Started out as a barber. But he built something big. Now you think he's the fourth person of the Holy Trinity. They never talk about their money. Wrong people go hungry. Die. Wrong people get loved. The world lives by trickery. You want to succeed, you can't be too good.
So by comparison to the mother, he says that the world lives by trickery. If you want to succeed, you can't be too good. And you just saw his wife, the mother of those boys, in his definition, I guess, being too good. Totally loving, totally caring, nurturing, and forgiving. Now, the mother and the father, I didn't realize this until I watched it a few times, they don't actually have names in the film. If you look in the credits, they're just listed as Mr. and Mrs. O'Brien. They have interaction with other adults, but they're never addressed with a name other than mother or father, and that always being by their children, obviously. Now, I'm not sure why Malick does this, but it might be just a subtle way to preserve or reserve each character's role to being simply that, or at least attempting to be simply that, of nature and grace. Now, the mother's a more likable character, that's clear. One of the interpretations that I think is probably the most common one would be to say that she's the better parent. She's the better person. While a quick response to the father would be to say he's mean, maybe you think he's a jerk, but I'd argue that it's not that simple. Now, sure, the mother's a loving person with an incredible perspective on life, and we have more evidence of that here as we see a bit of how she acts and what she says. So there's this assumption that's made that nature and grace are mutually exclusive, which in reality, in life, just isn't true. Because nature at times is very graceful. I mean, think of a soft rain or a soft snow or a sunset. And grace can be just chock full of nature. Think of marriage and parenting and many other relational things. Plus, there's no rule stating that just because a person exhibits natural tendencies most of their life, that they can't change and become different someday. Now, this is the only like pseudo-spoiler alert that I have, because in this scene, you're going to see some transformation that the father has after a whole life of being more of the nature guy.
I wanted to be loved because I was great. A big man. I'm nothing. Look, trees, birds. I lived in shame. I dishonored it all and didn't notice the glory. A foolish man.
Closing the plant. They gave me a choice. No job. Or transfer to a job nobody wants. Missed a day of work.
Mother.
Tithed every Sunday.
Always you wrestle inside me. Always you will.
You know, Jack, all I ever wanted for you was make you strong and grow up and be your own boss. Maybe I've been tough on you. I'm not proud of that.
I'm as bad as you are. I'm more like you than her.
It's about all I've done in life. Otherwise, I've drawn a zilch. You're all I have. You're all I want to have. This sweet boy.
A bit of an awkward scene in terms of apologies and things like that go, but my guess is if you watch the whole film, if you have seen it, or maybe this is inspiration to take one of these and watch it later, it gains a lot of power when you've seen the character developed of that father and the relationship that he has with his oldest son over the course of a few hours. As we see in this film, and as we know from our own lives, there's a thin line between nature and grace. They bleed together often. Now, Jack's relationship with his father in many ways, I think, is familiar to how many of us, and maybe especially us males, have experienced the reality of having a dad and being a son. It's normal, I think, for a young boy Jack's age, about 11 in the movie, to butt heads with and think that his dad is just kind of tough on him. But eventually, I think many of us come to the realization and appreciate that our dads were just trying to teach us how to work hard and how to live with integrity. Now, in that clip near the end of the film, we hear Jack whisper, and it's this haunting realization that he has. Father, mother, always you wrestle inside me, and always you will. Now, this realization that he's simultaneously influenced by both his mother and his father is perhaps most obviously displayed in a scene where Jack hurts one of his brothers. The middle brother gets hurt, and it's Jack's fault. And while we see Jack awkwardly trying to seek the forgiveness of his brother, we hear his voice narrating and saying the words, "What I want to do, I can't do. I do what I hate." Which is very, very familiar with what Paul writes in Romans 7, which is so close. I'm not even sure why Malik changes the words, but he says, "What I want to do, I do not do. But what I hate, I do." Now, the family and the characters depicted in Tree of Life are very human. This can't be understated. They're normal. My friend, Eric Barreto, a seminary professor and biblical scholar, doesn't think that we're supposed to see them as extraordinary in any way, But contrary to what we normally would probably try to do in making stars of movies into significant heroes or incredible people, he believes that it's in their mundaneness, their everyday ordinariness, that they become holy. And that the film, that this story, finds its beauty. Now, I personally think that the reason that Tree of Life has received so much critical acclaim is not just because it's a beautiful film, which it is, but rather its greatest quality is how accurately it portrays the reality of being a human. Because in reality, we're all flawed, right? The story is told from Jack's perspective, this boy torn between his mother, who is graceful, and his father, who is representing the way of the world. It's told through Jack's perspective because in reality, he represents each of us. He's living in the tension of his father and his mother, caught in the gray area between nature and grace, pulled by the attraction to love himself and the worthwhile struggle of loving others. It's selfishness versus selflessness. And it's the oldest story that's ever been told. We're all starring in a version of that story ourselves. But thanks be to God, our Creator, for forgiving and setting us free from our sinful nature and leading us to an experience of grace that's more beautiful than any movie could ever depict. Let's pray. God, thank you for art, for beautiful and complex expressions of life and faith, for giving us minds to think deeply in communities where we can bring our honest thoughts and questions. You've gathered us together here, and soon you'll send us back out into the world. May your Spirit guide us on the way. Amen.